so to speak, in the basement, you know, which is like the dog, this little puppy that was originally quite a lot of fun, and then as the puppy gets older, in order to behave in, you know, polite company, we put various parts of ourselves in the basement. So this is the dog that is now in the basement, and because, you know, the part that we've rejected starts to complain, and, you know, classically when mammals are separated from their mothers, they will complain loudly for a while. So while they're complaining loudly, of course, you move up one or two stories or up to the attic of the house so that you don't hear the complaints anymore. And in a kind of Zen sense, of course, this is that you move up into your head. You abandon your body and live in your head.
Right.
And both Katakiri Roshi and Suzuki Roshi, my Zen first Zen teachers, you know, used to say, Zen is to settle yourself on yourself. And sometimes Katakiri Roshi especially would point to his head, yourself, to settle yourself on yourself, and then point to his, you know, stomach, his abdomen, that you're settling your head. You're studying how to have, you know, your consciousness, which is normally so much in your head, to re-embody yourself, to re-inhabit yourself. And of course, when you re-inhabit yourself, you're going to meet the parts of yourself that you left down in the basement, which in this case is could be considered to be kind of, you know, your inner dog,
right.
That you're going to have to learn how to relate to. And sometimes the inner dog is very upset with you for having left, you know, for having been left for so long. And it actually takes a fair amount of time to gain the trust of the dog that you're not going to abandon it again, that you're not going to mistreat it, that you really are interested in what's going on. And, you know, in other words, with your body, how you're studying how to actually have a body and relate to a body. And this is different than be a body rather than I live in my head and I tell my body what to do and I expect it to do what it's told and not complain. And so this is a whole different way of relating to one's body and one's being, to be in the body and to say, how are you doing here and how would you like to do things? And so, for instance, in meditation, you know, I encourage people, although there's a form to practice, I mean, people say sit up straight, but actually, in a more intimate sense, you're studying where are your hips really happy and feel encouraged and supportive and they are happy to hold you up and they feel settled where they are and there's a good balance of being settled and energetic and, you know, and you're studying how to actually have your body have its life in a way that it feels happy and healthy and you're rather than just telling your body what you think it ought to do. And sometimes I joke with people, you know, I say, no, you know, or like following your breath, which is a basic practice in meditation or often in yoga practices, but who knows better how to breathe, you up in your head or your breath? And the question is how to turn your intelligence or your thinking mind, you know, over to your body and your breath such that it can realize itself and in that sense liberate itself from, you know, always having to be told, you know, what it ought to be doing and what it ought to not be doing. And these are very deep issues because finally it means, you know, are you're practicing or developing a kind of deep, deep trust in your own body and mind and being and life in this world to be able to find itself and to realize itself and to, you know, manifest itself in a way that connects with others and brings you happiness and joy and others' well-being. So this is, and it's, you know, it's not so simple and it's ongoing, but it's obviously work, you know, well worth doing.
Definitely. I also noticed a real change. It seems, you know, after 40, you just can't get away with demanding things of your body anymore. It seems to want to have its own way.
Not in the same way, absolutely. Yep. It's just about 40.
Seems to want to have its own way with us at that point. And boy, if we listen to it and we're able to follow along with it, there's so much we can learn. Whereas, you know, up until then, the energy is just
You have
so,
enough energy. Yeah. And in Chinese medicine, it's the kidney chi.
Yep.
The, you know, by 40, you don't have the same kind of it's the energy in the kidney in Chinese medicine which holds you together and allows you to go forward like that and impose your mind on your body. And then at some point there, you don't have the energy to do it anymore. It just can't be done. So.
Well, there's also
and then
that.
You know all those athletes retire at 40.
Yeah. And there's also that connection with the kidney being the mother and the liver being the child that
yes.
I found just fascinating recently. Just watching the connection between those two.
Yeah.
Just how, after midlife we tend to gain a lot of weight or disproportionately around that solar plexus area around where the liver is as that kidney starts to shift.
Yeah, the kidney energy grows less, so it becomes more important too. And I thought, geez, I'd done this 20 years of Zen practice, from the time I was 20 till I was 40, but then that was sort of like life began, and things turned out to be in the 40s. I left Zen Center right about when I was 40, and people say, well, why did you leave? And, in retrospect, I left to have a midlife crisis. I left to fall apart in peace and quiet, rather than in front of everybody at the Zen Center.
Right.
And then I thought, well, that's nice, and, we'll take care of that. And then it turned out the 50s were even harder because, I don't know what other people call it. I call it, male menopause.
Yeah.
It's been very challenging. And I feel like I'm kind of emerging from that now, and I'm ready for what's next. What's the next 20 years? And I feel like, it should be pretty nice now. I can't imagine things being. Obviously one can have sickness or various difficulties or problems, but in terms of just the unfoldment of, inner life and spirit and everything, I think that I've done enough work now with midlife crisis and male menopause and all the things that have happened that I'm kind of ready to go forward in a different way and see what my life can be and be there for people in a different way rather than, in being in the middle of my own
right.
Undoing, redoing, etc.
You get to move into your male crone, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Male crone, thank you.
Edward, I think it's about time to take a break, or it's
okay.
Appropriate to do so, and want to remind listeners that we are interviewing today Edward S.B. Brown, who's going to be doing a couple of events locally at the Morgan Bay Zendo, Friday evening, September 3rd, Saturday, September 4th. For more information, and this is Real Life Zen and Receiving the Blessings of Our Lives. For more information, Howard and Vicki, 374-9963. And Hugh Curran, 667-7170. And also an event at Tanglewood in Lincolnville, Camden area, September 10th through 12th. For more information on that, 589-4591. You are listening to Alternative Currents on WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 Bangor. Listener supported, volunteer powered, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Thank you. Welcome back to Alternative Currents. I'm Bella Johnson here today with Edward Espe Brown, longtime cook, yoga practitioner, Zen
priest.
Priest, there's the word. Yeah, etc. Edward, when you talk about the handwriting kind of thing, liberation through handwriting, can you talk a little bit about this? Sounds really interesting.
This has been a complete, I would, well, not, I mean, everything is not exactly, I was going to say it's been a complete joy, but I get very excited and passionate about this because it's been so powerful in my life. And it started about 10 years ago now. And I was at Tassajara at the Zen Center, and a woman at the work circle there said she'd been studying handwriting with a woman named Vimala Rogers, who I have since taken classes with, and I have her books. And Vimala is an amazing person who had a collection of hundreds of handwritten notes before she could read. She was fascinated with handwriting before she could read. And she spent her life, you know, studying handwriting, and she studied it where she wants to see for herself and know for herself rather than accepting what other people say about handwriting. And she got a job, like, in grammar school as the hall monitor, part of which was to empty the trash cans, and she pilfered notes and started studying handwriting.
Fabulous.
And, anyway, the woman at the work circle at Tassajara, and since then Vimala has gone on to study yoga, and she lived at the Ananda Ashram in the Sierra Nevadas, and she learned Sanskrit so she could read the Bhagavad Gita in the original language and so forth. And she's in the Bhagavad Gita, it turns out that there are 26 qualities that you can develop, and so she's associated these with the letters of the alphabet.
Oh my goodness.
The woman at Tassajara said that if we gave her a sample of our handwriting, she could tell us a little bit about ourselves and something that we might work on in our handwriting, if we, you know, were interested in that, something that we might change. So I showed her my handwriting, just two or three sentences, and she said, you're very smart, you're intelligent, you're spontaneous, you're creative, but, you know, tell me something, do you feel stuck in your life? And I thought about it for a moment. I said, well, you know, actually, I do. I do kind of feel stuck in my life. And she said, I'm not surprised you're making this self-sabotage F. And, I can't show you this over the phone or anything, but it's where the upper loop of the F goes in the usual direction, so-called forward. And the lower loop, instead of also coming forward, it loops backwards. So the bottom loop of the F is more like a loop on a G or a Y, rather than the lower loop of the F, more workably, or in the non-self-sabotage way, is like the loop of a Q. And so the self-sabotage F is one step forward, one step back, and your life isn't going to go anyplace. And I changed my F, and by golly, and how does the universe know this, or how do these things work, or what? I mean, it's like uncanny, it's like unreal. And the next year, I finished Tomato Blessings and Radish Teachings. I'd been working on it for more than 10 years, and it wasn't getting done. After 31 years, I received Dharma transmission, or Dharma entrustment, you know, final recognition of being a Zen teacher in the lineage with the Buddha, one with the Buddha. 31 years, I'd been working on that. It just wasn't happening. And then Patricia and I bought a house. I was more than 50 years old before I bought my first house, you know, bought my first and only house. And it's a big deal here in where I live to buy a house because this is some of the highest property values in the country.
Yeah.
So three things happened within a year after I changed my F. It's just unreal.
Change your F and change your life.
Yeah. So I became a devotee.
Wow.
And I started going to classes, and so including what she calls her handwriting immersion course, which is 5 days. And so, from time to time, I do I offer classes in, you know, changing your handwriting, and I also do consultations, etc. And sometimes, you know, things are just amazing. I mean, sometimes maybe not much happens, and this does depend on you actually have to practice it. You know, it's like a lot of things. If you don't practice it, but it's an extremely powerful, somehow extremely powerful tool. And you're, by changing the movement of your hand and your lettering, you're literally changing your neural pathways. And people say, well, this is hard. I can't do this. My hand doesn't want to do this. And it's like, I'm sorry, but it's not your hand.
Yeah. And if you think that's tough.
It's your mind, that must be having problems with it, because your mind is saying, you want a what?
Yeah.
You think you're going to what?
Right.
Because you've never done anything like this, you know?
Yeah.
And over and over again, it's just uncanny not always, but I just got a little postcard from a woman. I said, why don't you work on your R's now? And R is a letter of creativity. And she said she worked on her R's one evening for, I forget how long, if she said how long, but, you know, like half an hour of handwriting practice. And the next day she started writing again for the first time since the war in Iraq.
Hmm.
And she was just blown away. I mean, that it could have that kind of power. And I have another friend who worked on her D's, which is a letter of sensitivity, which is usually sensitivity about what other people think of you. And Vimla encourages people not to make loops in the stem of the D. But I have a friend who worked on her D's, and when she first started working on it, she was sensitive to 35 foods. And after she'd worked on her D's for about 3 months, she was sensitive to 3 foods. So it's just, sometimes it's just unreal, you know, what happens with people. So I have many stories like this. And on the other hand, you know, sometimes people work on something and not much seems to happen. And sometimes I work on something and not much happens. But it's fascinating. And then, you know, and then traditionally, you know, she says, and, you know, a lot of boys especially say, well, some of us didn't, you know, sort of rebelled about learning to write. And she says, well, of course, especially boys know intuitively that the handwriting we were taught in school was teaching us to do what we're told, fit in, don't stand out, don't think for yourself, fit in, obey the rules, etc., you see. And that's what handwriting was teaching us.
Well, it's funny because as much as they kept trying to correct my R's, I kept making my own.
Yeah, there you go.
Making R's like
they
made.
I'll be curious to see them, Bella.
Yeah.
When I'm there in Maine, you'll have to show me.
Yeah, they're like they did around the turn of the century. It's kind of like, you know, it's, yeah, interesting. But, you know, they kept trying to correct me, and I was just like, not going to happen.
Yeah.
So funny how that works. Yes,
my next door neighbor changed her self-sabotage F, and the next thing you know that she was a dentist at the time, and the next thing she knew, she was pregnant, and she sold her dental practice. That moved her life ahead.
Yeah.
So you have to watch out for these things about
what's
moving forward. And, you know, if you're not sure and willing to, you know, venture into the next phase, it's better not to change anything.
Right.
But then she, you know, she...
Is that
she,
possible? I don't think it's even possible, is it? Not
well,
that I want it.
Well, you know, some people... you know, endeavor to do that and kind of stick to what they've done in the past, and it kind of works out for them. And, you know, I mean, it's a kind of a choice to as much as possible to do that. Some of us are not so interested in doing that, and we'd rather learn how to let go of the past and be open to the future. And, you know, there's various handwriting things that have to do with that. Anyway, just to finish up about my neighbor, though, she then got a specialty in TMJ, and so she's things are going well for her. And then just yesterday we decided that she could work on that. Her name is Jennifer, so she's going to work on her capital J because she's been bending over backwards a little bit too much for people. So anyway, yes, I've been delighted with that. And then, do you want to know about mindfulness touch too? While we're
at it? I do, and I wonder how much you're going to touch on either of those at the Morgan Bay or the Tanglewood. workshops.
Well, now that we're talking about it, I may just have to, you know. I might just have to have like a lunchtime seminar or something.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't talked to, I have to talk about that with Vicki and Howard and with Melissa, you know. And, you know, maybe we can put a little something in because, you know, I think these are wonderful, engaging things and things that, you know, meditation, you know, in and of itself is pretty challenging. So if you can do yoga or, you know, handwriting changes or mindfulness touch, there are a lot of things that you can do. Or, you know, now I'm doing, you know, Qigong. There are a lot of things that you can do that are pretty powerful in their own way. And whether it's as a, you know, either as a core practice or as a practice to go along with meditation, I found them just terrific.
Gives you something to meditate about. No, just
well, there's that.
Kidding about that. No, actually.
I think,
yeah, so
you
mindfulness.
Know what,
sorry, go ahead, Ed.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that regardless of what we're doing, you see, it. You know, one of the keys for me is like, I came across the expression actually in Thomas More, you know, Soulmates, his book Soulmates, and his idea is very much like mine, and he says, if you're in a relationship that's difficult, really what you need to do is not figuring out how to make it work, but to widen your, what he calls your poetic imagination, I believe is what he called it. Mm-hmm. But it's widening your poetic or your creativity or your, the in other kinds of languages, it's giving yourself more choice and to shift away from the sort of feeling of I have to, I should, I must, I can't, I'll try, and to actually, you know, allow for something to come forth from your own spirit,
yeah.
Which is, of course, not just your own spirit or your own heart, so to speak, but, you know, it's the universe or the divine or the blessed, or if you're in that tradition, you know, it's God, you know, it's the energy of the beyond coming through you. Your inspiration and your gifts and your vitality, and to let, and how do you receive that and then allow that to work in your life?
Right.
And that's, you know, there's just a lot of ways to do that, and certainly meditation is one of them. And you had mentioned, you know, receiving the blessings of our life, and that's certainly, you know, to receive a moment of experience as though it's a blessing is very powerful in this regard. And then to receive, you know, one's own inspiration and ideas and, you know, possibilities, and to be open to things in that way is another kind of the blessing, because things are way more, lots more is possible than we often, you know, appreciate or allow for ourselves.
Well, it's interesting you were talking about in relationships when there's stress. I mean, I often find, much to my chagrin, because I'd love to say, well, you know, this person's got their stuff going on, but more than likely it's that I've stifled some deeper part of myself that, you know, gets transferred onto that person somehow. So it's interesting that you also came up with that idea to kind of release something creative or expansive within the self.
Yeah.
I don't complain much when I'm in a good space that way.
Yeah, it's sort of like you don't have to be annoyed or offended by what other people are doing if you're giving yourself permission to respond to things. And if you're saying, well, I can't tell them this, or I can't say that, or then you're going to be upset that, you know, you can't, but you're the one who said that that you can't, and then you say, well, they don't want to hear what I have to say.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Right, interesting. So mindfulness touch, we can touch on that a little bit, maybe.
Well, I became fascinated with this. I started doing, I started doing some hands-on healing work with a group here in California, which has since disbanded. And I found it just fascinating, and I found it very challenging at first, because I was, at the time I started that, very much of a literalist. And, or, you know, a realist. And if you're a literalist or a realist, there's a lot you can't sense or feel, because you just told yourself, like, that I can't touch what people are feeling. I can touch stuff. I can't touch feelings. Or I can't touch judgment. Or, you know, so you kind of easily pre-decide what you can touch and what you can't touch. And the basis of mindfulness touch is that when you touch someone, you could not just be touching substance, but you're touching consciousness. And then, so that's first of all. And then secondly, the other fundamental principle here is that in mindfulness touch, you're endeavoring to touch someone and receive the person. And receiving, and this quality of touching and receiving is very rare. And because most touch is go over there, come over here, calm down, straighten up, relax. And most touch, or it's saying, I really like you, and why don't you? And it's giving some kind of judgment or directive, or it's diagnosing, it's fixing, it's helping. So with our touch, we're endeavoring to communicate something, and implicitly when we communicate that, we're telling the person that we're touching that they're wrong. You know, if they're feeling anxious, we're telling them, calm down. And we think of that as being helpful. We think, well, I'm going to help this person by encouraging them to calm down. But implicit in that is it's wrong for you to be upset.
Right.
And so a lot of consciousness, which we can then find in touch very directly and easily, a lot of consciousness gives these, most conscious moments of our awareness, we're giving directives to the object of our consciousness, telling it what to do and how to behave. And then, of course, it doesn't. So this is frustrating.
Right.
And so to practice mindfulness touch is to just practice being with whatever's there and not helping, not fixing, not changing, and just agreeing like, oh, you're sad, oh, you're tight, oh, you're tense, oh, you're struggling, oh, you're relaxing, oh, you're, you know, this is warm, this is cool, this is hard, this is soft. So you're, and initially I use the four elements from Buddhism, which is earth, water, air, and fire. So there's a sense of, when you touch someone, there's a sense of solidity, sense of fluidity, a sense of kind of wind or currents of air, you know, certainly the breath, and then there's a sense of heat or cold, or a kind of what sometimes is called incandescence. So you're endeavoring to, or you know, your aim or intention here is to touch and just receive. And oftentimes when you touch somebody and just receiving how they are and allowing them to be how they are, then that's very relaxing because nobody is now judging them and saying, well, why are you so uptight? What's wrong with you? And then if you feel in the, and this is very similar to what happens just in the presence of somebody who's not judging much, you start to feel very happy or relaxed. Because I don't have to defend myself from this person's judgments about me. And this also happens just in the context of meditation, you know, because Buddhism is that mindfulness is the basic practice in Buddhism. So if you're practicing mindfulness of the breath, you're not trying to make your breath a certain way. You're not trying to make it longer rather than shorter or deeper or calmer, or it's just letting the breath be how it is. And after a while, it's as though your breath relax and of itself, it just starts to relax, and then it starts to expand because you're no longer telling it, well, you know, relax. Well, you know, can't you be calmer? And that kind of agitation is actually, you know, your breath is not relaxing because you're telling it, you know, to do this and do that. And at some point, it's as though your breath is saying, you know, could you just let me do this for myself, you know, instead of, you know, telling me what to do?
Right.
So mindfulness, anyway, this is the basic vehicle or, you know, practice of a kind of real possibility for change, which comes when, you know, there's no longer judgment and there's just noticing how things are. And once we notice how things are, there's a kind of shifts that can happen and we can enter into a different kind of space, not because we legislate it or impose it on ourselves, but because we're intimate enough with our experience that a change can occur. And it's not something we necessarily, it's not something that we figure out ahead of time. And And then pretty soon, because we practice that, you know, we can trust that the change will be all right and that the shift will be fine and that we'll settle more deeply into ourselves and into, you know, being connected with our life and, you know, other people in our life and so forth. So it's pretty nice. I found touch work. And it's interesting, too, by the way, you know, I've found touch work to be extremely, for me, you know, extremely important. And I've learned a tremendous amount in it. And it's interesting that in that sense, of course, that like meditation, you know, it often requires a kind of formal context. That it's hard to meditate if you just say, well, you know, without setting aside time and you say, we are going to meditate here. We're going to hit a bell to begin. We're going to hit a bell to end. And this is the time we're going to do this. And also the formality of, there's a certain formality that helps with a sort of touch like this, because otherwise you get concerned, like, boy, if somebody touches me, like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, permission.
Yeah, and you want to be in a context of, this is a touch that we're doing in this context, we're not, and it's not about, you know, it's not about relationship or love or sex or anything else. This is about connection, and this is about studying our awareness and how we're aware of various things. And certainly a lot of things can come up in that context, but you have also the sort of the sanctity of that space that you're not going to go, you know, that this isn't going to lead to, you know, these other things. And so you're, you know, you, if you're not careful about that, then it's hard to have, it's hard to have the intimacy without actually having some formality. It's very interesting. You know, it's the same with meditation. Because meditation is this, because ideally, you know, meditation is a place where anything can happen. Like, finally, you can let your mind do, you know, do or think or feel anything. You don't have to tell your mind or body how to be, because in the context of meditation, you're not going to do anything.
Right.
You're not moving and you're not talking. So when if you happen to feel angry, it's like you could feel angry because you're not going to move and you're not going to talk. So you're not going to hurt anybody.
Right.
And if you feel sad, you're not going to go jump off a bridge or something, because you're not going to do anything with it. And so you have a kind of safety or container for experiencing things without having to do something about it. And this is very powerful, regardless if it's in the context of meditation or it's in the context of touch or just in the context of your daily life. Pretty interesting.
Now, Edward, is Patricia doing this work with you?
Patricia does a lot of work with me over the years.
This is Patricia Sullivan we're speaking of, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
but she's not coming to Maine with you this
she's
time.
She's not coming to Maine,
okay.
No.
Okay. I just want to remind listeners, again, speaking with Edward Espe Brown, and we're running a little short of time, so just to make sure that I reiterate the events that are going on, he's presenting at the Morgan Bay Zendo, Real Life Zen, Meeting the Inner Dog and Tasting the Truth of Each Moment, Friday evening, September 3rd at 7 p.m., and the next day, Receiving the Blessings of Our Lives, at Saturday, September 4th. You can call Vicki Pollard or Howard Evans, 374-9963 for more information. Again, 374-9963, or Hugh Curran at 667-7170. The other event in our area with Edward Espe Brown is At Ease in Body and Mind, Second Annual Meditation and Yoga Weekend at Tanglewood Camp in Lincolnville, Maine. For more information, Melissa Hatch, 589-4591. I want to thank you, Edward, for being with us on Alternative Currents today.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And
you,
Bella.
Yes, and would wish you very well on these retreats. And
I'm looking forward to coming to Maine. I just find Maine so refreshing after California.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you.
Well, I'm from California, so maybe you can tell me. But I've been here over 30 years, so
yeah.
It is a different...
Well, it just feels so much more wholesome and down-to-earth.
Yes, that it is, with all the granite
yeah.
that surrounds it, and
yeah.
yes, nice grounding. So, best wishes to you,
yeah.
and
yes,
join us again on Alternative Currents next month, first Friday of the month at 10 a.m. This is Bella Johnson saying, enjoy your summer. Mm-hmm.